Thank you very much, David. It is such a pleasure of ours to be partnering with Rotary again. We did a program with you last year up in the chart room. If anyone was here, we were packed to the core. And so it's such a great pleasure for us to be back and have a little bit more space. And I hope we can do this again. I just want to briefly mention that our programs are normally on Friday. If you currently don't have us on our radar and you really like the food here, please come back because we are going to be back here on Friday. And we have a program about friendly dictators. Our speaker has a book. We have them in the front. If you want to do a little bit of reading beforehand, check out and see what the World Affairs Council has to offer. We have a lot of great things. And with that, I'd like to introduce our speaker, Consul General Abdullah Al-Sabusi, who's the Consul General of the United Arab Emirates in Los Angeles. The Honorable Abdullah Al-Sabusi has been appointed Consul General of the United Arab Emirates, UAE, in Los Angeles, covering the West Coast in July of 2013. Prior to this assignment, he was the Director of the American and Pacific Affairs Department with the title of Ambassador at UAE Ministry of Foreign Affairs. The Honorable Al-Sabusi served two tours in the UAE Embassy in Washington, D.C. He started as a Director of Congressional Affairs before being appointed Consul and Head of Legal Affairs. He ended his tour in Washington as Head of the Political Section. Prior to that, he worked at the UAE Ministry of Foreign Affairs as Chief of the European Union Desk and was involved in the European Union Gulf Cooperation Council free trade negotiations. He was also a member of the UAE official delegation to the United Nations General Assembly Millennium Session in New York. He led and was a member of numerous UAE delegations to several regional and international conferences. For all the students out there, please note that Abdullah graduated from the University of Minnesota with a double major in political science and international relations with a minor in history. He also attended courses at the National Defense University and Brookings Institute. He has received several awards during his diplomatic career, the last of which is the Distinguished Diplomatic Award from the UAE Ministry of Foreign Affairs. Please join me in welcoming the Honorable Abdullah Al-Sabusi, who will be talking about UAE's emergence on the world stage.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me today in this beautiful weather outside. But it's good to be indoor. It's a real pleasure to be here with you all, especially with the Alaska World Affairs Council and the Rotary Club. Thank you very much. I have a long relationship with the World Affairs Councils from in different places of the country. And it's always nice to have a partner and to have people who are interested in hearing what's going on out there in the world. And I really welcome the chance to tell you a little bit more about myself, my country, the United Arab Emirates, and its relationship with the U.S., because our relationship with the U.S. is really unique, and as you will see, and different. I moved to Los Angeles about 2 years ago to become the UAE first Consul General and open the first office outside of Washington, D.C. And the first thing that people always ask me, what does a Consul General actually do? Well, I had over 2 years to figure this out. So let me tell you about it, about what I do. You see, my team in Los Angeles provide regular consular service, such as visa and Emirati citizen assistant, and commercial support for U.S. companies seeking to do business in the UAE and vice versa. And the great state of Alaska happens to fall under my jurisdiction, and that's why I'm here. But our mission is much bigger than this. In many ways, the UAE consulate is a reflection of our government desire to expand our already deep relations and ties with the United States. And what better place to, for our first consulate than the Western U.S. I have found that Emiratis and Americans truly share many of the same values and aspiration when it comes to things like Middle East stability, economic growth, education, and the environment. It is from these shared vision for a better future that new opportunities for cooperation emerge. The best part of my job is doing what I'm doing here today, speaking with Americans. You see, from the introduction, I love my country a lot, and I love this country, so it's no surprise that I love nothing more than talking about the UAE and its relationship with America. So my real appreciation with the U.S. probably started with the many hours of I Love Lucy that I watched, growing up as a child. Rerun. So, believe me, though, that isn't the foundation of my U.S. knowledge. So when I came, when I first came here, I didn't expect anybody to break into a dance number or anything, you know. But you know, my fascination with the U.S. has stayed with me through adulthood, in my career as a diplomat, before. Becoming a consul general, I was head of the Americas desk in the UAE Ministry of Foreign Affairs, or the Department of the Americas and the Pacific. And the United States was a central and portfolio from the political side that I had. And barrier to that, of course, in my wonderful years in Minnesota. Yeah, you betcha. I do have a Minnesotan accent that sometimes. But you know, I studied political science, specifically the political history of the U.S., and I learned of the courage shown by the founding fathers, people like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. Were visionary leaders who made bold choices in order for this country to achieve independence and succeed. And although the UAE was only established in 1971, the founder and first president, Sheikh Zayed, actually acted in a similar way, I can argue. As a leader of the only federation in the Arab world, Sheikh Zayed understood the importance of the collaboration and consensus. He also understood that providing for the needs of the people through education, healthcare, and economic opportunity, the UAE would be able to flourish and become the regional success story that it is today. And allow me to tell you more about that story. You see, when the UAE is mentioned, just like Alaska, many people think of oil, and they ask, what is an emirate? What is united about these emirates? Well, an emirate basically is a small city-state, and the UAE is made up of seven of them. Much like the unification of the American 13 colonies, it was clear for Sheikh Zayed that strength is found in numbers, and it was better to unify the emirates into one federation. The emirates we hear most about are Abu Dhabi, the capital of the country, and its largest city-state, as well as Dubai, the second largest emirate and most populous. Abu Dhabi actually, believe it or not, holds 94% of the country's oil resources. And speaking of which, it wasn't always something associated with the UAE. In fact, many don't know but for the longest time, the UAE economy was dependent on the local pearl diving industry. My mother, for example, comes from a long line of pearl divers and fishermen. They, in fact, if you go to Ras Al Khaimah, another emirate, another city-state, they have the Pearl Museum, and you can meet a pearl diver who can introduce you or, you know, demonstrate to you how they did it. But, you know, so my ancestors will go collect pearls from the shallow waters of the Gulf, then sell them to jewelry manufacturers and buyers in Europe and U.S. If you remember the old days back in the 1920s, these beautiful pearl necklaces dominated, if you saw those movies before. And this practice sustained the country economy for some time until 1940s, when innovation and another country further east squeezed the UAE out of the market. Japan-cultured pearl farms could produce around 10 million pearls, not only at a cheaper price, but at a more consistent shape and color. The UAE economy collapsed, and as late as 1960s, the Emirates were amongst the least developed nations in the world. This all changed with the discovery of oil in the 1960s, and the rest is, as they say, is history. The progress we've made is hard even for me to believe, and the changes multiply every day. For example, the village where I was born, it's called Suihan, an oasis in the middle of nowhere, you know, probably similar to one of the villages around here, was quite a place with mom and pop shop, land, and not much of anything else. But now the village can be rightfully called a town, with its own hospital, fire station, strip mall, and over 1,000 flourishing farms. That's in a desert. Oh, and my favorite, I know it doesn't mean a lot to you, but my favorite is we have our own bowling alley, our piece of Americana. Today, the UAE stands as the second largest economy, you guys, in the Arab world, which is no small feat considering we are only a little over 43 years old and have about 8 million people. That's roughly, you know, close to half the population of Ohio. The U.S. was one of the, and the size of the state of Maine, the U.S. was one of the first countries to establish formal diplomatic relations with the UAE after it became a unified federation in the 1970s. And these quick steps to build ties between the two countries led to today's steadfast growing alliance. Undoubtedly, one of the most successful aspects of the U.S.-UAE relationship is our trade and economic partnership. Last year, the U.S. exported a whopping $24.6 billion in goods to the UAE, ranging from agricultural products to automotive parts to high-tech equipment. These numbers have made the UAE the U.S. largest trading partner in the Middle East and North Africa for the past 6 years. More than 1,500 U.S. firms have operations in the UAE. In fact, more than 80% of Fortune 500 companies have presence in my country. Many businesses use the UAE as a convenient regional hub for conducting business in the Middle East and Africa, as well as some parts of Asia. In the process, well over 50,000 Americans have decided to make the UAE their second home. The UAE has also invested hundreds of millions of dollars in projects in the U.S. And the examples are immense. For example, Global Foundries, which is the second largest computer chip manufacturing, you know, producer. We have, I think, $5.4 billion dollar investment, providing 2,000 jobs, U.S. jobs. As of 2014, Alaska has exported 696,000 in goods in the UAE, creating American jobs in the process. Alaska exports to the UAE are dominated by a small number of manufactured goods, items, cars, and aircraft parts. UAE ranked 38th among Alaska's export markets, although the UAE economy is only the 31st largest in the world. And while in Anchorage this week, I look forward to taking a tour of your beautiful city as well as a hiking tour. One sector where the booming U.S.-UAE economic relationship can be felt is in the aerospace industry. Just to give you an idea, two of our world-class airlines, Emirates and Etihad Airways, operated between 10 different U.S. cities and the UAE directly. the trip that I take from Los Angeles to Abu Dhabi or Dubai is 16 hours continuous flying. And when combined, actually, get this, the UAE Airlines are the largest purchaser of Boeing commercial aircrafts with GE engines in the world. Last year, or 2 years ago, three UAE Airlines purchased a total of 300 Boeing aircrafts with that valued at $120 billion. That's over 600,000 U.S. jobs, you guys. But the bilateral economic relationship is not limited to the Boeings and the Lockheed Martins. Smaller American companies are also seeing their business grow because of trade with the UAE. For example, we import the bulk of our almonds and other nuts from companies such as Blue Diamond and Fisher Nuts in California. And I was really shocked to the figure is $960 million per year of worth of nuts. That's a lot of nuts. And other familiar American companies have set up shop in the UAE, including Cold Stone Creamery, Bechtel, Starbucks, and the numbers really speak for themselves. And a big part of my job is to increase that number of American companies, increase the inflow of foreign direct investment, which is very important for any state future and viability. I had really good meetings today with the governor's office, and I saw how similar we are with the great state of Alaska. Maybe I can talk about that more in the answering questions part. I'd like to take a moment to discuss another crucial area of partnership between the UAE and the US, which is security. The UAE is located in a very dangerous neighborhood and has been a crucial ally for the US and others in the fight against extremism and regional aggression. There is no way of putting it lightly. It's rough out there. Most recently, the shocking and despicable actions of extremist group ISIL or ISIS have made it quite clear that none of us can beat the bad guys on our own. If we don't get rid of them now, they will continue to multiply. These groups threaten our values and our lives. These values include treating women as full partners in society, respect for other faiths and minorities, and most importantly, upholding the Islam, the true Islam, a religion of peace and compassion that I grew up in. As a moderate, tolerant leader in the region, the UAE is proud to join an international coalition with the US and other allies against ISIS and other extremists. Defeating these groups requires efforts both on and off the battlefield. This means stopping extremist funding, disrupting the recruitment of foreign fighters, securing borders, preventing the exploitation of the web and social media, and contesting the use of religious centers to promote hatred and violence. These heinous acts must be blocked before they expand further. Our track record in working together has been greatly successful, and we must not stop now. You see, about 5,000 American troops are currently stationed in the UAE, most of which are located at Dhafra Air Base in Abu Dhabi, and Dubai Jebel Ali Port continues to be the busiest port of call for U.S. Navy outside of the U.S. Our close military cooperation is crucial and to combating the dangers that threaten to destabilize the region. For example, the UAE is one of three countries ever and the only Arab nation to participate in six international coalitions with the US over the past 20 years. The first Gulf War, Somalia, Bosnia, Afghanistan, Libya, and today against ISIL. We have continuously supported the tightening of sanctions to contain the Iranian threat. And for nearly For a decade now, in Afghanistan, we have played a key role in humanitarian initiatives and in ensuring the safety and stability of local communities. The plethora of challenges in the region has only brought us closer to work on new innovative strategies protecting our communities. In fact, I was representing the UAE in 2012 in the Global Counterterrorism Forum, the first ever international center of excellence for countering violent extremism, as was inaugurated in Abu Dhabi as a result. It's called Hidaya and is one of the most important initiatives that I worked on, and underscores how closely we are working together to fighting violent extremism. And when the UAE was developing its roads and power plants in the 70s and the 80s, it also focused on improving its social infrastructure. We began building schools, universities, hospitals, and like Alaska, the UAE believes that innovation and strong education are the catalyst for to strong workforce. As such, my country has focused on transforming K-12 education to ensure that the UAE students are fully prepared for the global marketplace. What better example to turn to than the US? In fact, there are hundreds of Emirati students studying in the Western states. I'm meeting Dean Rashmi Persad tomorrow, and hopefully a few will come here too. The New York University built a 2,000-student campus in Abu Dhabi. MIT, we have a huge investment in renewable energy, over $15 billion. And at the center of that is a partnership with MIT to create the first ever a postgraduate institute focused on renewable energy. We believe this is important for our next generation. That's the right thing to do, and we're investing in things in solar farms in North Africa, in Spain, in the UK. Wherever there is new ways of harvesting or creating new clean energy, you'll see us there. Our biggest investment, however, is in human capital. It was Sheikh Zayed who believed that. Investment is the real investment is in human beings, and we worked very hard to build our country as a model of peace and stability and tolerance and opportunity. And you know, investing in women has always been a natural priority for the UAE. We cannot forget that women make up the cornerstone of our society, especially in a country as a small as the UAE. And when I speak about women, you know, okay, here in the U.S., it's the audience is like, oh, big deal, you know, that you guys have made big advances. But I think it's good to talk about this because there is a lot of misinformation, or maybe I can shed a little bit of about the women role in the UAE. Women fill 2/3 of all public sectors posts, and 30% of these are decision-making posts. Women comprise 22% of the UAE Federal National Council, which is our parliament body. There are also four Emirati women ambassadors to the Spain, Holy See, Portugal, Montenegro. And we our ambassador to the United Nations is a female ambassador, Lana Naseba. And the example go on. I mean, you know, we have women serving their country as fighter pilots. In fact, you know, Commander Maria Mansouri is leading our troops bombing ISIS. I mean, that's you know, she's flying these F-16s, and we're very proud of her. We have women female interpreters of Islamic law. We have judges. You know, truly they are a force of nature. You know, you have to meet some of them. And you know, growing up, my mother had the biggest influence on my life. Being divorced young, I remember her juggling six kids while attending night school and then and investing and trying to, you know, invest in real estate. She has been leaning forward since before I can remember, attending to life at home and while, you know, still finding time to travel and do and continue her business pursuit. She's a very successful businesswoman now. I could continue sharing examples about my country, but I am really interested in hearing from you. So in closing, let me end where I began. The UAE-US alliance is just a little over 43 years old, but look at all what we have managed to accomplish in that time. From our shared economic and security interest to social partnerships for the betterment of our people, our friendship is one based on trust and loyalty. I'm proud to be the Consul General covering the Western Hemisphere of this great country, and I look forward to working with you, each of you. Thank you for your attention. Now, I would be happy to answer any question. Thank you so much.
Well, Consul General, thank you for joining us today and sharing us with the balance, because I think all of us in the audience here are probably overwhelmed with the stress and anxiety that the Middle East seems to be generating worldwide. And I think your comments today about the relationship with the UAE and the U.S. in commerce, in terms of human rights and security, are refreshing. So we're going to have a lot of questions out here from the audience in just a minute. So as we progress to the questions, I do want to ask you to raise your hand. Kari from the World Affairs Council has got the microphone, and this is being recorded for rebroadcast, so I would appreciate it if you would wait until the microphone gets to you before you ask the question. But on behalf of the Anchorage East Rotary and the World Affairs Council and all of the audience here, thank you for coming. We have a little bit of memorabilia for you to take back to hopefully bring you back again to Anchorage and share some more progress that you're making on behalf of your country.
Definitely, thank you.
And before I cede this microphone back to the Consul General, I want to encourage my fellow Anchorage East Rotarians to give some consideration to joining the World Affairs Council. It's meant a lot to me, and I'm proud to be a part of both organizations. And in fact, what I'm going to do is, Alyssa and Menica back there, I'm going to suggest that if you've never been, my Anchorage East Rotarians, if you've never been a member of the World Affairs Council, I'm going to buy the first three memberships that go back there and see those girls out of my pocket, because I believe so well in this organization's message of education in helping this community here in Anchorage to understand a little bit more about what's going on globally. So with that, Consul General, come on back, and if you would raise your hands, if you have questions, raise your hands. Kari will get to you, and then Consul General will answer. Thank you.
Thank you for coming today. I just had a question we're coping with here in our state.
Yes.
How has your nation dealt with the new normal of oil prices that seem to be in today's day and age?
That's a good question. Thank you very much. Well, we've managed. Remember I told you the story about the pearls, the pearl industry that collapsed our economy? We learned a lesson from that. Well, I think the first lesson that we learned is between the 1940s and up to the discovery of oil, like I said, we were dependent on foreign aid. So now the UAE is per capita, we don't give as much as the US, but the UAE is the largest donor per capita in the world. So we are giving back to the same, to everyone, including the US, for whatever we got before when we were in need. The other lesson we learned is not to put our eggs in one basket. So we've managed to diversify our economy, where now oil accounts only for a third of our GDP. And you know, we created, we invested heavily in tourism and aviation, as you saw, in ports. We are the third largest port operator in the world. The leadership have been very positive about setting goals. They're very high goals. You know, now who would have thought, you know, 30 or 40 years ago that the tallest building will be in the UAE, or we're going to Mars. We're sending a ship to Mars by the year 2020. I mean, these are not just, you know, these inspire the people of the UAE to, you know, reinvest and support and play an active role in this diversification of the economy. And from what I saw today earlier in the governor's office, I can see that there is a lot of similarities to the histories, and that I think that you guys, with the investment, sound investment that you're making, you are on the right track for a better future for future generations here. Thank you. Sorry for the long answer.
Yes, please. Thank you very much for being here. I think we all really appreciate, from your corner of the world, it's been growing so enormously.
Thank you.
The United States, we will admit, is not a perfect model of democracy. But the question I'm sure people here would be interested in, your style of government, and what movement is being made towards more democratic systems. And we understand that one of your problems is you've got this enormous immigration issue. I mean, I'd break a leg to get there and be a part of that economy.
Yeah. You know?
So I wonder whether you could talk a little bit about how you deal with the immigration issues. Maybe some of it would be helpful to Europe.
Of course. No, that's a great question, and a momentous one too, because the reason I'm cutting short my trip to Alaska instead of, you know, spending a few more days is to go and conduct elections. The consulate will open up for our parliamentary election for the federal national election. Like I said, the form that we have of our democracy have been always based on the Confederate system, and we have these seven semi-independent states with seven ruling families that have been ruling for hundreds of years in history. And we have a unique system where the leadership is always close to the people. There is a tribal system, in fact, that connects everything. And we are gradually moving toward a more representative process. But I think our government is taking the right path in gradually expanding and introducing and creating the culture, because you don't, you know, with the evolution of any democratic society takes time. So I think we are in the right path as far as the the progress that we are making in politically. There are indicators, there are numbers that can gauge how well that is happening. If you see, if you look at the international indicators that the United Nations has, you know, one simple indicator that I always look at is happiness level. The UAE as a nation is one of the happiest in the world, indicators. And the same thing cannot be said about a lot of very democratic, very open, you know, countries. But we have a very unique system, and we're very proud of it. We're progressing tremendously. And the immigration question is really coming to the second part of your question, is a big question. I mean, you know, I'm not sure exactly which part that you're talking about. You want me to focus in, or the labor, the temporary. Yeah.
Immigration, and then there's some that you may not want so much. And those people are asking for representation.
I don't think, you know, we have been. Okay, first of all, the immigration system that you guys have here in the U.S. is very unique, where you are observing the melting pot. And this is unique to the U.S. And a lot of, if you go to Switzerland, for example, it's very hard. It's much harder than than the U.S. And it's even harder in the UAE because, you know, one of, you don't know this, maybe you know, but but the UAE, 1 in 8 people in the UAE are UAE citizens and from the UAE. The rest are there, have been there on a temporary basis from all over. We talked about the 50,000 Americans and, you know, from Europe, from Asia, from India, from all over, unskilled labor, skilled labor, from all, every walks. And I think if we had a similar system that the U.S., the UAE will no longer exist in its heritage and its tradition, its history, all of that. That could jeopardize it. And so I don't see any problem with people coming and working for 3, 4, 5, 6 years and going back, and, you know, especially because a large amount of these people are for are there, you know, on contracts for the, for, you know, construction and similar projects. I don't know.
Does the UAE, like Singapore, Norway, or Alaska, have a sovereign wealth fund? And if so, what are the major investments? And specifically, was your airline, Emirates Airlines, which has gained such a good reputation, part of that investment? If not, where'd the money come from for the airline?
Yeah. That's a good question. Thank you so much. I got a briefing on the your sovereign wealth fund, or the investment fund, for the state of Alaska. And I think we operate in a similar fashion. In fact, we were the most major sovereign, we have many, the most major sovereign wealth fund that we have is called Abu Dhabi Investment Authority. It was created the same year that your sovereign wealth fund was created. By coincidence, I don't know. But and we collaborate together through the international agency that together. I'm very proud of the investment, much like the investment fund that was created here. The reason behind it is for the future generations of the people to, you know, the oil is not going to stay there forever. So all of this investment is for our generations to come. And I'm very proud of our sovereign wealth fund because it has been a positive player, meaning they come, they're not interested in small, quick earnings. They come there for a long term. They stay, and they are not majority holders of any investment. They will never take over a company, or you'll see us investing a small shareholder in many major companies and investment, and more funds are created in a positive way. The funds which are created for renewable energy. You know, that hopefully will pay back that investment in 50 years when we run out of oil or, you know, or the demographic change or whatever. But and some investment funds are okay. Did you know this? By the year 2016, every airplane in the world will use some part manufactured in the UAE. You know, and this investment is through a sovereign wealth fund. So we're doing this, diversifying our both internally and outdoor. But I know that the money is always welcomed anywhere, that because it's very conscious investment and very proud of what they do. I hope I answered your. No, it doesn't. No. Local governments, those. Yani, for example, Emirates is owned by the. There are stakeholders, but owned by the Dubai government, and Etihad is similar in a way, but it's more complex than what I'm, you know, what I'm saying. Yeah, and there is a difference between owning something, and. Supporting them, or you know, meaning that the government doesn't support the airline, although it may with you know, although they may own it. That's kind of answer something.
I want to get your perspective on the Syrian refugee crisis. I think it's fair to say that there's some frustration in yes. Europe and probably in the United States. About the wealthy Arab world not stepping up as much as it could to deal with that. Could you tell us what the UAE is doing about the crisis? Are you guys taking refugees? Are you providing assistance for the situation?
Yes, thank you. That's momentous because there is an escalation of allegations that that we are not doing enough to, and the record is out there. It's in its actuality. For us, the UAE, you know, with the population of 8 million, we absorbed. We have close to 240,000 Syrians living in the UAE, and since the conflict. Before that, the number was, you know, over 100,000 came. So that's, you know, that's a lot for the UAE to observe. We also have contributed hundreds of, you know, like for example, $570 million to the fund, and we have, we are with the U.S. along with the U.S. and the coalition to. To help with the refugee crisis, we hundreds of millions of dollars in the refugee camp and in places like Jordan, which is overwhelmed, millions of refugees. Lebanon have you know almost close to half of its population doubled or you know increased to half of the population. Lebanon by half by absorbing millions of Syrian refugee. The same can be said for. For Turkey, Iraq, of course. So Saudi have announced the numbers. You know, they have to close to 3 million. You know, so we're doing a lot to address this problem, but it's a huge problem, and we don't see any relief in the horizon. And I honestly, it breaks my heart. Every day we see something. You saw that baby washed ashore, and you know, it's just heartbreaking what's going on there. And I hope that we can find a solution quickly to deal with that problem.
In the coming years, the United States may or may not take steps to normalize relations with Iran. And I'm curious in seeing, would this have any effect on our relationship with the UAE? And what would you say is the UAE's attitude towards Iran?
Well, you know, I spoke about the rough neighborhood that we are in, the UAE. And I mean, we had, a long historical trade relationship with Iran. However, three things concern us when it comes to Iran. Nuclear program is an issue, obviously. We share that with the U.S. We don't like the regional meddling that's going on in places like Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, Yemen, Bahrain. So we don't like that. In fact, we are currently fighting in a coalition led by Saudi Arabia, the Houthis and the terrorist groups in Yemen, and trying to give control back to of Yemen to its own people. And of course, the main thing, the main issue that we have with Iran is the three islands occupied by Iran: Tomb al-Kubra, Tomb al-Sughra, and Abu Musa. These are three UAE islands occupied by Iran since 1970. And we continue to ask Iran to sit down on the negotiating table and talk about these, or refer them to international arbitration or court. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you. Hello. Welcome to Alaska. And the UAE exists in a part of the world that experiences water shortages. Yes. And as I'm sure you're aware, even the state of California is experiencing drought. Yes. and fresh water shortages. On the other hand, Alaska has abundant water and fresh, clean water, and we have a homegrown bottled water industry where we're shipping water, exporting to Japan, Korea, and parts of the Far East. Do you see a role for Alaska to work with the UAE to help with their water shortages?
Thank you so much. That's a great question. I wish we had this in common, the abundance of water with you guys. This is something we're exploring, and I think it's a great idea. I think it's underlining a lot of the problems in the Middle East is water, is control over water sources. A lot of people don't understand that. And so I think anything that Alaska can do for the world of providing more water, fresh water, is great. And we thank you for it. Thank you. Oh, yes.
Thank you, Consul General Dula Alisbusi, for coming to speak with us. Can you hear me? Okay. Is the UAE emergence on the world stage, thank you, in regard to education, which you had addressed before, to support a student exchange program and foster or encourage a benefit to the US and the UAE? Could you answer that, please?
So if I get your question, it's about student exchange?
Or do they foster to benefit the UAE? Yes. And the United States?
I think so. I think it does. We have programs with in all levels, from elementary until college. Because you see, with the world is becoming smaller and smaller as we speak. So you have all these universities that are connected, schools are connected. You know, my kids in the UAE, they go to an American school, Abu Dhabi International American School, with the curriculum that they get here. Similar curriculum. Transition is very easy. But there are programs of student exchange, especially in the summer, when we get a lot of our students here to different places. Hopefully, by next year we have a delegation of UAE high school students or elementary or something come here to Alaska, because it's really beautiful here. I'm very impressed. But yeah, we can expand that too.
I guess this is the last question. I'll try and make it good. Council General, first off, I think I'm going to be in Dubai before you are. I'm going to be there in a couple weeks.
Oh, wonderful.
And I've been going for years, and I got to tell you, just watching over the years the stability of your country, is amazing. And I even hate asking the question because it's really not a story for the UAE, but what do you think the number one, or maybe it's several, reasons why radical Islam has never taken a foothold there? It seems it's just not part of the culture.
That's true. That's a very good question. One that we are blessed, I guess. That's one thing. But one example I can think of that we are back before the 1960s, before the oil money came. A Canadian couple, came to the Sheikh Zayed, and they said, "We will build a." He was then ruler of a small city or town in the middle of the UAE, what we know now as the UAE, Al Ain, if you are familiar. So they came to him and said, "We will build a clinic here." When there were none. And they said, but there is a caveat for this, and we will build a church. And he said, you're welcome. I need the clinic for my people, and we don't mind having a... And now you see temples, you know, churches from all the different denominations. We have no problem with religious freedom as long as it doesn't infringe on others' beliefs or lifestyle. In fact, it's a very important part of everyday life. And we believe, you know, that this diversity is very important, you know. One, and this is... Who would have believed that the UAE is at the forefront of fighting political Islam? Because I think it gives a bad name for a beautiful religion. When you talk about people hijacking a religion to serve their own political interests and stuff, that's the problem. That's what happens usually. And when you separate them and I think this is when you start seeing flourishment in trade and economic prosperity and the culture and all other things, you know, take effect. So I'm very optimistic, though, with all the bad things around us, with all everything now. It's very dangerous. But I'm very optimistic about the future. And I thank you very much for having me here. And I look forward to saying hi to some of you personally. Thank you.
Well, Consul General, thank you again for joining us on behalf of the Anchorage East Rotary Club and the Alaska World Affairs Council. Good luck to you as you proceed in the balance of this year.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, the meeting's adjourned. And if you are interested in future Alaska World Affairs Council events, go ahead and go to the website, and we will have a full spread of upcoming events. So thank you again. Everybody have a great afternoon.